Hey, awesome nerds, and welcome to another episode of D&D and TV, the weekly podcast where we rewatch television shows we really enjoy and talk about how the themes, concept, and characters could be used in different role-playing games. I am your host, Jeremy Talliman, and I am joined by my co-host, Danny Calamari, who is currently loading a needlessly smelly Fire Nation catapult.
Like, I don't know why it's so smelly. I don't get it. Like, is it supposed to like throw people off, or is it just 'cause the smelly stuff is flammable? What is this?
I mean, the smelly stuff being flammable kind of makes sense. Like, I was expecting it to like have some sort of fumes that like create a I don't know, like a cloud that then people can't see through as well.
It's a
That seemed
weird
like a
detail. I guess we'll get into it, but it's a weird detail.
really? Like, it's a needless detail, I feel. Like, there's so much. Yeah, because we're talking about Avatar: The Last Airbender, the 2005 animated series, and we're talking about episode 8 of season of book one, Water, which is Avatar Roku, also known as Winter Solstice Part 2. And in this episode, during the Winter Solstice, Aang must travel into the Fire Nation, which wants to capture him, to communicate with his predecessor, Avatar Roku. I love that the synopsis had to like remind us, by the way, Fire Nation bad.
Financial,
They're
not
the bad
good.
guys, you guys. No,
Where they're
they want to
going,
capture him.
dangerous.
Yeah. It's like the first 30 seconds of every episode are everything changed when the Fire Nation attacked. Like we know this is what happens. If you've seen, I guess it's only episode 8. Maybe they're expecting people not to have seen it.
Oh, I think still though, if you're up to this point now and you haven't figured out the Fire Nation of the bad guys, you haven't really been watching the show.
Sudden had like a weird element of like the whole Frankenstein monster, like fire bad, Fire Nation bad. Oh, I know fire, but P.S. Fire Nation bad. Yes, I know fire is bad. That's a random joke that only I get. That synopsis actually does pretty much sum up everything that happened in the episode, though. It was really good. It was good. They show up, Zuko's chasing them. They get through into the Fire Nation. Zuko continues to chase them with Zhao chasing him. They get in, they talk to the Roku, and then shenanigans.
No, I'm a big fan of this episode. I very much enjoyed
It was really cool. The
it.
scene, like, I was watching the bit where they're in between Zuko, or basically when Zuko's firing the smelly catapult at them, and then the Fire Nation blockade fires back and they're going to hit Zuko and they're going to dodge them all. I'm like, this is really well shot, and I'm really tense. It's only like 3 minutes into the episode, and I know they're going to get to the thing, but oh my God, you guys, this is like really, really tense.
No, I know, because it's not like they're in a like a ship, an airship or something that could get hurt. It's Upper. Like, he gets
Yeah, it's
smacked by one of
Upper.
those things. He's not gonna handle it well.
No, and he did catch fire a couple of times.
Yeah,
I'm
he did,
sad.
yeah.
I had to pat him out. So pop, and then Sokka falls off, and they've got to go catch him.
Yeah, like that even like so yeah, in this scene, like, yeah, they're flying around, they're getting shot at by the Fire Nation and stuff. And yeah, they're dodging it all, and then Sokka falls off of Upper. And I
Yeah.
thought, I'm like, oh, I forgot about this part. Did they capture him? But no, it's just adding tension to that one scene, which was great.
Yeah, or does he hit the water, or does like what
Yeah,
happens to
like,
him?
is it going to become a part of the plot that they split up from him? But no, it's just.
And they have to go back and get him, or something like that.
Yeah.
I thought this was a really interesting little sequence because I thought it worked really well for role-playing games and like for action sequences.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't quite like I can see them having to make a whole bunch of rolls to try to avoid like animal handling rolls and dexterity saving throws. There's all these giant flaming rocks or whatever they are flying at them. Like it worked really well. And then you've got the failure of, okay, so you only just succeeded. Now your mount's on fire and you've got to patch that out. Or Sokka's fallen off and you've got to go and rescue him. And all these obstacles that keep coming up
Yeah.
and like making things slightly harder.
Yeah, I think it's like say the player of Aang only just succeeding dodging a thing, so then everyone has to make dex
Yeah.
saves, Sokka fails, and then he starts flying off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Like you can see where the roles would take place and where those things would be happening. It makes for a great action sequence in the show, and I think would make for a really fun sequence at the table as well.
I think that's a good way of saying that's the action sequence at the table, because you can see, like you said, the beats where the roles would take place.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing for a game master to take away from and go, okay, these are the beats I need to hit.
Yeah.
These are where I have the obstacles come in. This is where I have them make another roll. Because it's not just make a roll. You don't need to make three rolls. You need to make rolls at certain points.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's not kind just of, like an overall roll.
Yeah. You build that encounter to meet those points, those story beats, to make them mean a lot more. And then the outcome of the roll doesn't matter as much because the roll is just there to build a little bit more tension.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, if they fail, things go badly, as we saw with soccer. But it's like, okay, you're just there to build the tension for it. And I was thinking about this because the whole thing is kind of a chase sequence, like from when they're having to push Appa. Why can't I say his name today? Push him faster because they've got to get to the temple before sunset. And I was thinking, how do you do something like a race against time? How do you do a timed encounter in a role-playing game or in D&D?
A timed encounter?
They've got a certain amount of time to get to the...
Right,
To the island. But it's like, well, you're just traveling. How do you work out how far they go? And an encounter like this is a really good way of breaking up that race, because you have obstacles that you can put in. It's like, all right, well, if you fail enough rolls, you're going to be late.
Yeah.
But if you succeed in enough rolls, you might be early.
Yeah.
And it kind of factors in that way.
Yeah, it's good because obviously, like, you don't want to role play too heavily. It depends on the game, but sometimes in the travel sections and stuff, if it's like, oh, you could get there, but you forgot to pack the exact right amount of food, so you're going to have to stop, which is going to take a little bit more time off. And like, while that works for some games, I don't think it's always going to be the most fun for the table. But padding the time out with something like this, and then also having the outcome of this affect, like you said, how early or late you are, is a much more fun way to do something like that. And tense.
And it comes out with that sense of urgency, yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think it needs to be, if you want it to be like that, because I think a lot of adventures don't have the that sense of urgency to it. It sort of becomes, particularly when you're trying to get somewhere before an in-universe time frame, it becomes a little bit like you're on the final disc of Final Fantasy, where you're just, cool, the boss is still coming, but I can go and do all these side quests first and wrap up all the loose ends.
Yeah.
And you kind of forget that it's going to be a thing. And I think having encounters, because that does kind of break it down into, well, you've got to do it before a certain thing occurs.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, one of the ways I like to do it in encounters is I have certain like beats on different rounds. Like at the end of the first round, this will occur. At the end of the second round, something else will occur. So they kind of get the feeling that, you know, like a boulder rolling down a hill, you start to see, oh, the boulder's getting closer. We need to do something before the boulder hits us. Like, we need to be out of the way. So whatever we do. And that kind of creates that tension of, you know, James Bond struggling as the lava gets closer and closer.
Yeah.
But you could do with like an egg timer. Like an egg timer puts the real world time limit on it as well.
Yeah, I think something like an egg timer, it does depend on the group you've got. Like, I think it can really be like if your players can see an actual like timer in real time ticking down, definitely adds to some tension. But I think you can only do that with a pretty experienced group.
I'd agree. Yeah.
Because then I think people who aren't experienced with D&D or don't know their characters too well or certain systems, it's going to probably feel really overwhelming for them. Doesn't mean you kind of have some sort of timer. It could be timed in rounds. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like in a round of combat, or, you know, how, depending on the, if it's a combat encounter or not. And like something like this, I feel
that situation, you generally want it to be in a combat encounter.
Yeah. And something like this, for example, it could be like, you could have some sort of combat-ish encounter where they need to make it from point A to point B in a certain amount of rounds, or it's going to get really bad, and you have an overwhelming amount of enemies. They can try to go and take them all down, but that's going to be really difficult and really dangerous. But the kind of completion of the encounter would be just getting everyone to the other side, not necessarily... Like, combat encounters also don't always have to end with everyone dead either.
Yeah.
It can be an escape, or a, as this one is, like a pass-through. I don't...
Yeah, like, but it's getting to the other side of the map, basically. Yeah. I think that's a good way of doing it, because you can balance the waves of enemies, and really you've just got to say, okay, well, you've got to survive for three rounds. It's going to take the refugees three rounds to get through the doorway and safety. And you lot are experienced. So as soon as they're through, you win. You just got to survive those three rounds. And that's when you start throwing at them, like, the big monsters with them. And just like, okay, cool. If you really want to take on the big boss, you can stick around a little bit longer, but it's going to be worse. You might get stuck here. That kind of feel. But yeah, I like that element of tension. It's fun.
Yeah, and narratively.
And then you can add those obstacles in you add the obstacles in that will decrease the time they have, or increase the time, like benefits that will increase how long they've got.
Yeah. You know, I was going to say as well, narratively with this, like within the context of the show and in terms of a story, this an encounter of this scale we haven't really seen in the show yet. With like this many people involved, and like if this was a role-playing game, it's that same thing where it's like this episode really propels, I think, the story into kind of its overarching thing, and we'll get into that, I guess, with certain things that's explained later in the episode, but kind of like showing you the direction of this show. And for a role-playing game, like, they have just been jumping from island to island, doing little things, meeting some people, having occasional encounters. And then they've decided, hey, let's skip to the end location. And like, I want to fast forward talking to this guy that should be hard to talk to, but no, we can do this. And then be like, all right, you want to see what's out there, and then hit them with this overwhelming force. Which works for tension, but also works narratively to be like, this is what we're dealing with. Like, this is what you're going to have to get strong enough to overcome.
Yeah, I think giving them the direction for the campaign.
Yeah.
Which is what Roku kind of has to give Aang at the end of it, is really helpful at about this point.
Yeah.
Like, they've had the introductory sessions, you've kind of got a feel for the rules, you're kind of figuring out, all right, this is the stuff I can do. Well, if we're using the metaphor we've had previously, Aang's character's got the map.
Yeah.
And he's got kind of a quest, but he's just been, I can just do it whenever, I just can wander around. And now the Game Master's kind of sat down and go, no, you got to do this by a certain point. You can't just, like, really laissez-faire your way up to the Northern Water Tribe. You've got to do it soon.
Yeah. And you can't, you also can't go fight Ganondorf with just a broom. You need to, you need to build your powers up. You need to get the other stuff, get the Master Sword. You're not going to be able to do this, with just the stuff you've got at the moment.
Yeah. Except,
sorry to use the Breath of the Wild analogy. I don't know if you've played before, but
I am aware of what Ganondorf is.
No,
you don't need to say just the broom.
No, it's just the whole thing of being, because you can go to him, but it's not recommended. But yeah, like that whole, because he's got the map and he's like, oh, I can go anywhere. And he has kind of been getting away with it up to this point.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of the point of it.
Yeah.
They do need to remember that the stakes are quite high. And that even if they're able to take out Fire Nation leaders, like Zuko has been an antagonist, but they can take him on. But this element of the Sozin's Comet that they get told that this is what kicked off the war and this is what makes the Fire Nation even more powerful. It's like, well, now you've got something that you're not able to deal with your regular abilities. You need to do this. You need to learn to be the best, essentially. You need to level up.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, this sort of ties in with like my whole thing about the race against time. It's like when you get a deadline like that, like they're very specific, it's going to be the end of the summer,
Yep.
which is, well, let's see, it's a winter solstice. So they've basically got 6 months. How would you track time in that regard? Like, how would you show them the passage of time? Would you like just go, okay, so it's been 3 weeks and things are starting to move on. You start like have let them really count down those days as you tell them, or would you just kind of have it a little bit more vague, but start to show them things getting worse and worse as it gets closer to that date?
I think it depends on the game. For something like this, where they have upper and they're traveling and they can freely travel wherever they want, I think because of that mechanic being there, there needs to be some sort of not penalty, but like they need to be aware, because I guess once you start putting in a time limit, they're going to ask questions. How long will it take for us to travel to this island? So I think time-wise, it'd be more based around the travel, being like, okay, well, you can travel to this island, it takes 2 days. So then, like, keeping track of that, and then the time slowly ticking down there, and then however long it's, they're on islands or doing things like that. And then for certain story beats, sure, then it'd be like, hey, you've been here for a few weeks. But I think because of the travel mechanic, it does need to have some sort of tracking there, in my opinion.
I think it's definitely one, if the players don't keep track of themselves, the game master has to in that regard. I'm remembering there's a adventure module for, I think it was third edition, the Red Hand of Doom, which has been talked about on the Matt Colville YouTube channel. But one of the really cool elements of that is it does have a countdown. That it has basically the first session of the adventure is day one. And it says at day 60, the army that they're fighting against will reach the capital. And the players can do whatever they want. But there are certain points through that schedule where the enemies will respond.
Right,
So
okay.
you kind of get that feel, and so you get the entire little sandbox you're in, but on day six, the army reaches this point. On day 12, it reaches another point. So you kind of get the feeling as they move around, it doesn't matter. It gives you that feeling of the living world. It's
Yeah.
like the adventurers might have gone, okay, well, we want to do this. You're like, cool, that's going to take you 3 days. And they're like, yeah, that's great. And then they realize, oh, those 3 days means the army got to the village that we were trying to save.
Yeah.
And that's when it starts to come in. And it's like, yeah, you get that sense of how time has passed, and suddenly things are a little bit more desperate and a little bit more intense.
Yeah. And it's not
That's
like,
my
I know,
word.
like, there are some, I think, game masters that are going to be like, oh, but I don't want to punish them for running around and having fun. It's not like punishing either. Like, it is,
Could be.
it could be. It depends. No, but I think it's also like, it is just adding to the overall narrative. And also, for a lot of people, because of the crossover, in interests, there will be a lot of people that maybe, if they're new to role playing games, are more just akin to video games, where, like you were kind of saying, like with Final Fantasy, you can run around forever and do every single side quest, and doesn't matter how long you take, the villains are just going to be frozen in place until you interact with them. Which isn't like, if you want to do an on breathing ongoing story, it doesn't have to be the case. The villains can act on their own and do things in the background, regardless of what the heroes are doing. And so to have that thing where it's like, oh yeah, you did that, but like they've reached this village, it can be a bit of an oh shit moment for your players, but can actually be good. It doesn't mean you're being mean to them either. It just adds that tension, adds that, you know, that sense of urgency, and shows them that this can happen and this world exists outside of their characters.
I think one good way of doing it, if you don't want it to be a punishment to the players, and let's say we'll use examples from the episode, but also from Red Hand, where it's maybe the army doesn't wipe out the village because they took too long. Maybe instead, when the players get back, oh, the army is just coming over the hill and now they've got to deal with that.
Yeah.
So it becomes this element of, all right, we're not punishing you, but there are consequences to what you've done, rather than you now don't have a safe place to stay. And yeah. I'm thinking about in the episode when they try to get through the doors.
Yeah.
In the temple, and they manage to do the trick. And the doors are opened and they're like, Aang, go now. And it's like, all right, but he's not going. And you're like, what's happened? And it's because Zuko's arrived.
Yeah.
And it's that little bit of element. You're not punishing them for taking a bit too long to open the door. It's like, no, you're giving another encounter.
Yeah.
Because of it. And that encounter doesn't stop you doing what you want to do. Well, sort of does. You just got to make some rolls. But then again, For Zuko's play, he took a little bit too long capturing Avatar. Oh, now Zhao's shown up.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of moving. It's not ruling out the agency. It's not removing the agency from the players because they've taken too long. You're putting a complication and an obstacle in their way because of that. And it's something they can overcome, but it needs more work. Or it means more work for them every time.
Yeah.
Because honestly, that was cool. Because thinking about just the fact that everyone's got to... It's very much about time and trying to meet that deadline in this episode of Avatar. That it really was like, okay, so they're only just getting there before the sun. And then Zuko just arrives. And then Zhao just arrives. And they only just get away. And it's always like that nick of time.
It's... sorry. Wow. Sorry
so,
about that.
So bored. So bored so by this episode, everyone. Before we started recording, Danny was just like, oh, this is the worst one of the series.
I'm so
now
sorry.
I see why. Just put him to sleep.
I'm so
no,
sorry.
No, I lie.
About
He's
it.
Saying it's great. It was.
No, it was.
No, it's been a long day here.
No, I was just going to say, like, it is really good in this episode. I do love that. Mm. And like you're saying, all of them just in the nick of time and having the, like, I guess what would you class it as? Three different forces all kind of converging. Technically four if you count like the what are they called? The protectors of the
sages.
The sages.
Fire Nation sages.
Fire Nation sages. Fire
Nation
sages.
Yeah.
I
wonder about them, honestly.
Yeah, I know.
It was weird.
No,
wait,
they're
followers of Roku. That makes more sense.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
It's done really well.
Yeah.
All of it, like this whole episode, the whole build up, everything like we've talked about is, I think, so well done.
And it all kind of weaves in together.
Yeah. And special mention.
And
You go.
You say. No, you do it. You do it.
I was just going to say, like,
we're
not editing
that out. We're
that
just going to suffer with
scene,
it.
That scene we're talking about with them dodging all of the cannonballs, I was just going to say special mention to the Nat 20 that Aang's character rolled to jump in the air and kick one of the cannonballs out of the sky.
That moment where it's just like, this one's coming for us, and he's just going to jump forward and explode it in a perfect ring for Appa to fly through and then fly back onto it. I just like, wait, that's even fucking cooler. Why wasn't he doing that for all of them? Because it'd be really hard.
Yeah.
But it's also just that extra element into the scene. It's like, no, this isn't working. We're not rolling well enough. We've got to do something to actually stop these things.
Yeah.
And, it's so cool. So cool. But that element of weaving it all in as well, that I was just going to mention, where it's you're weaving in Zhao and you're weaving in Zuko and you're weaving everyone kind of coming in. But then when they get to the temple and they find the Fire Sage traitor or the ally in that regard, that he mentions he knew they were coming because of the eyes of the
of
statue
Roku's,
lit up. Yeah, which we saw a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
So it's the kind of thing where, like, suddenly this thing happens to the party, and, like, because of that thing that you did three sessions ago, this has occurred now.
Yeah.
Like,
and
you
again,
run out, if they just...
I was just going to, just tying it into what you were saying, sorry, about the breathing world as well and having it a world that exists outside the players, like, tying that into that. Like, you know, they saw it, they knew, like, because of your actions, it wasn't just, like, they started to exist the second you stepped foot on the island.
No. And I mean, we saw it in the show as well. So it's not like the show is just making this up as we flow, as it goes along. We got to see how the Fire Sages reacted, but also that element of if they hadn't been to the Air Temple, would they have done so well here? If they just come straight here, would the ally have realized who they were? It's like, probably not.
No, probably not.
Because they didn't think the Avatar was back yet. Like, he might have figured it out because, hey, an airbender is able to do all this cool stuff. It's like, or it would have created more problems. So in that case, it's kind of rewarding choices.
Yeah.
Just as much as showing that there are consequences as well. It's, it's so cool, you guys.
It's so
this
good.
Is the best one so far. Although last episode was pretty good.
Yeah. I do have a question, though.
Yes.
Do you think the other players are getting sick of Zuko's player? Because he keeps causing so many issues for them.
I wonder. Like, I don't think they are. I think that they're kind of enjoying it.
Yeah.
Because the Game Master keeps giving them outs.
Yeah.
Like, it's the... have you ever had a party where two players really love PvP and that's player versus player for people who are just tuning in. And they only do it with each other, but they have prank wars and they do all this other stuff against each other, but don't really involve the rest of the party.
I have like a lighter version of it, but yeah.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if it's something like that.
Right. Okay.
Like, every time he comes across here, it's always, all right, I'm putting you in this very easily escapable situation. And how are you going to escape? Like, if he wins in his roles, they get chained to a pillar.
Yeah.
And if he loses in their roles, then they all fly away and they come back next session. So it's just kind of like, this is just another encounter. But it's with the person that is across the table from me. So he's almost, I know this is a thing in Dragon Friends where they've got two game masters a lot of the time, or they've got the game master and the dungeon master who runs all the encounters, but then they have someone else playing all the NPCs.
Right. Okay.
So sometimes it feels like that Zuko is that other player where it's not technically the Dungeon Master because he's kind of going off book occasionally.
Yeah.
But he's also just there as another player at the table rather than the one pulling all the strings.
Yeah.
I really want to try that sometime to have somebody else like do all the voices and just hear the
really
notes
fun.
And here's the general personality of this person and here's what they want. Now you do it.
Yeah. Good luck.
You have that conversation. Having listened to Dragon Friends for a few years, it never goes well.
No, I'm sure it doesn't.
It never goes well. There's always like, oh yeah, well I guess that's a fair assumption. I guess I'll switch sides now. It's like, no, you won't. No, you won't. He's very angry at them still. But yeah, I don't think they're getting fed up with Zuko's player at all. I think they're loving it. Every single moment. Like, he's so many role-playing opportunities.
Yeah.
And we always get, like, a bigger bad at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Like this again, Zhao shows up and he's all like, "Okay, cool, I've got a prince and a traitor, ha ha ha." Jason Isaacs fucking killing it as always, and that immediately puts Zuko on the side of the party.
Yeah,
because he's got to escape, and they've got to escape, and then he'll go after them.
He's but for gonna now, escape.
They're going to be on the same time.
It's going to be the perfect opportunity for them to finally team up, and no, he runs away at the end again.
He runs away again, as he does. But that's the thing, that the Game Master can easily put the... Because he's so close behind them every single time. It's like, you know he's going to catch up.
Yeah.
You know he's going to catch up and be in the most of the session. So it's... And yeah, it's great. And yeah, he didn't bring his friend this time, so the Uncle Ira guest play is just back to NPC status.
The DM may not have been too happy with the friend. Like, no, you spent the whole previous session pretending you were naked. We gotta rein that in.
we gotta stop that. You don't get to come this week. There's one other thing I want to talk about, and there was more about the Fire Sages, because I realized about halfway through that the ally didn't get a name until like the very end. Maybe he did give them his name, but I didn't remember it.
No, I don't. Yeah.
Oh, he definitely did get a name, because after they fly or when they're escaping, Aang's like, "Where's CG or something?"
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what they said, and it turns out he's being captured. But there was that element of like, he's just a faceless dude. He's just another NPC, you guys. But the thing is that they're very NPC, but they should be allies. And this is something that you see in D&D a lot with stat blocks, that they're all monsters in inverted commas.
Yeah.
Like, you're always fighting monsters, and then occasionally you'll have like a few good aligned monsters, like unicorns and angels and stuff like that. But they always feel like, well, we've got to have the bad guys, or we've got to have the good guys in there too, so there's a balance and you understand how powerful they are. But no one actually really fights them.
Yeah.
And I think this is a great example of a way to use the stat blocks of the good guys against the party without it having to be like, and there's a rebellion, or, you know, you don't need to kill them because they're just mind controlled or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, mechanically, they're exactly the same as if the Water Temple had sages. It's just they use fire instead of water.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it doesn't... Yeah, like, it... I don't know what else. I was about to say something, but it's kind of repeating the same thing you were going to say. You were saying,
Just say, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And we wouldn't want to repeat ourselves on this podcast. That's not what we do here. No, I want to... Because it's my want to mention other games.
Mm-hmm.
One that I'm currently obsessed with is Imperium Maledictum, which is the 40K cyberpunk style game, I guess. And cyberpunk's a good example as well, where a lot of the time the people you're fighting are just regular folk, or they're not necessarily bad. They're just from a different organization that you need to destroy. So the stat blocks don't have to be super different. They don't have to have tons of abilities. They don't have to be, this is a goblin and it's able to do this and it looks like this. It's just, he's an officer. Like, just use the police officer stat block because, you know, or use a security guard stat block because that's pretty much what he is. And they're all kind of the same anyway. And I feel like that's something that you see a lot more in modern and sci-fi games than in fantasy ones.
Yeah, fantasy ones seem to be more heavily focused on race over... Over, like, job or over skill, I guess.
Yeah.
Of the individual.
Yeah. It's like goblins are being able to be crafty and, like, move out of combat really quickly, and orcs are able to be aggressive and and violent. And it's like, well, racist. But...
Yeah. That's why, like, I do personally prefer to, in, like I said, personally, it's each to their own. Ooh. I prefer to focus more on what the person's themselves capable of rather than their race. like yeah. race coming second.
Yeah, it's interesting that there aren't that many stat blocks just for general humanoids.
Yeah.
In D&D. Because I'm also looking at Flea Mortals, the MCDM, I guess, guide to monsters, where they introduce the action economy, which is a great system, and minions, and a whole bunch of other rules. But one of the things they do is create a whole lot more humanoid stat blocks. Like, you have some that are just humans, and you have some which are just hobgoblins, and some which are just ogres, and some which are just giants. And the idea is that you have, like, the tiers. So you have the ones that can be taken out with one hit, the ones that are, like, super leaders and do other things and, like, lots of magic, rather than just the basic stat blocks in D&D. Mm-hmm. And one thing I noticed is that the only non-monstrous, again in inverted commas, race that they have in there are humans. Like, there's no dwarven stat block. There's no elven stat block. There's no merfolk stat block. And they're very easy to adapt.
Yeah.
But that's still an element that you wouldn't expect. Like, you're not expecting for the party to have to fight a bunch of elves.
Yeah.
And I just wonder why there's that element of, no, these are got to be, if you got to fight them, it's because they're bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's never just, these are the fire sages who kind of became corrupt and kind of just switched sides.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because they like, you know, players like to murder whoever they're fighting. That's probably the reason. That's just me going on a little bit of a tangent.
No, but I do agree. Like, and I have found that as well. Just that thing of, like, even trying to look at stat blocks. Like, oh, this is all for, like, monsters and all for... I don't know. Like, I just want, like, general... Like, I would so much prefer looking at stat blocks and seeing things listed more in jobs or more in skill sets rather than race.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I mean, and sometimes there is a bit of a problem. There are some, but I think one of the problems that D&D comes up against is that they give these races other abilities when they're just the monstrous race. Like, you'll give aggressive to an orc.
Yeah.
Which is a trait that means that they can move closer to the enemy every turn. And it's like, well, if you're just creating a basic stat block of, let's say, Captain of the Guard, they might have some great abilities that'd be cool on an orc, but now you've got to give the orc aggressive as well. And there's that element of, well, we've got to keep it balanced.
Yeah.
It's like, no, you don't. You really don't. Give it as many abilities as you want. Chances are the characters are going to kill it anyway.
Exactly.
I think I just changed opinions on my own stance. Then. I want to get back on topic.
Not Avatar.
So, yeah. Avatar! Yeah!
Avatar! Momo, no, my favorite earthbender.
Momo, he got a firebending hat now.
Yeah, he does have a firebending hat.
See, I think Momo might be the real Avatar. Just saying.
We have another one of those moments in this episode, actually, where the sages open the door and Momo is just sitting there. But at least he's the Avatar this time, or like a bender. Yeah.
It's just the Avatar's lemur. I worry that they know that the Avatar's got a lemur.
Yeah, I know.
Like, damn. Like, I understand the Sky Bison, because that's like flying around and all over the place. But the lemur's tiny.
No, I think what this episode proves with Momo disappearing for a short amount of time and coming back with a hat, that he's out there causing mischief, having his own little adventures. People are well aware Momo every time Aang shows up somewhere.
Oh, for sure. Momo's like got his own side quests going on all the time. I always love a familiar that gets its own side quest.
Yeah.
Just when they come back after, like, no, I got shit going on. Like, you understand, you've got a story, but I'm doing stuff today.
It's just like certain things where if you got someone having a familiar that's semi-intelligent, just like if they take their eyes off it and like turn back and they've got a knife, like where'd the knife come from? Like, what have you been doing?
Don't ask.
Yeah. just having them like acquire different items or different things that they definitely didn't roleplay to get is so, I think, so funny. And just to have that little thing like, hey, keep an eye out for this one. It's doing its own thing. I'm keeping track of this familiar.
It reminds me of two different things. There's the episode in Community where Abed has an entire thing going on in the background of each shot.
Yes. Where he's delivering the baby.
Yeah, and like helping the couple reconnect and all that other thing. And I'm pretty certain there's a line in there. It's like, you've got a whole separate thing going on today, don't you? It's like, yeah, I do. But there's also, I don't know if many people would have seen Bowfinger, the Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy film. And there's a scene very early on where they're making a film for a very low budget, and they basically grab a whole bunch of, I guess there were illegal immigrants coming into the States. He basically just drives up with a truck and goes, everyone in. And the guys at the start who jump in don't speak any English. They've got no idea what they're doing. They're just kind of like holding the boom mic and not sure what to do. And by the end of it, they're like media moguls and they've got like cell phones and they're taking other calls and like they're the best in the industry. And it's like, they've had their entire arc off screen. It's like, we were doing other stuff. Thanks, by the way.
What was I had a group playing, and they had kidnapped, semi-adopted, semi-kidnapped a group of these guys, and they were all wanting to, like, didn't know what to do with their lives, these people, so they're like, oh no, we'll make you into a band, we're going to make you a band. And instantly it started getting to their heads, so like completely changed the course of their character arcs, and they started to be really up themselves really quickly, and they all wanted to be the leader. And the group didn't want to deal with that. So they're like, we're going to leave you on this island for a few days. Here's a sword. Everyone hold on to it. Last person to let go is the leader. And they left. So then I had to like make sure that these guys like had their own little arc, figure out which one would have like held on the longest and which ones wouldn't have cared and all of that. And it was just, they let them have that whole thing happening in the background.
It feels really dark, because it's like whoever holds on to the sword longest is going to have the sword and can just kill all the others.
It was so
terrified of those blokes.
I know, it was so stupid. It was so funny because they were so excited, like, hey, we're going to get a band. And then they started talking to them like, oh no, these guys suck. Like, they are not fun people to be around. So they're just like, it was in the span of one session of being super enthusiastic of a band and then being like, we're leaving on this island, figure this out.
We're just going to leave you here. This is up to you now. Let's go. NPCs. What would we do without them? They have very boring adventures. Exactly. I'm sure. Yeah. Now, when Roku does his whole Obi-Wan speech to Aang and then possesses him to get rid of the Fire Nation.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, do you reckon that's the Game Master taking control or just upgrading Aang's sheet and giving him a bunch of abilities that he can use for a limited amount of time?
I think it depends. I think as the DM, I wouldn't take control because like...
No, I wouldn't either.
Because it like takes away the fun from the characters playing Aang. I don't think it'd be an upgrade to his sheet, though. I think it'd be taking his sheet away temporarily and giving him a temporary sheet.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
Different abilities on it.
And just
so you're not taking control of his character, but you're like, these are the limited things you can do in these scenes. You have like maybe three spells, and that's it.
Yeah.
But they're really powerful ones, and it might be a... Once you use these spell slots up, you're back to Aang, or maybe it's just a round thing. I don't know. But yeah, I do think it'd be just giving him a whole sheet that isn't even a full character sheet, just like really limited.
And saying that these are abilities that you can unlock given time.
Yeah, exactly. And giving him like, a little sneak peek.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a cool way of doing it. I like that idea. I haven't really done that before. I tend to, if I'm going to give the characters something different or the players something different, I give them an entirely new rule set. Usually, I give them, like, we're playing Crash Bandits tonight, have fun, rather than D&D. But yeah, I like that idea of being like, okay, so here are three abilities you can use instead. Get used to them because you may need them down the line, kind of aspect.
It's like there are some video games. One of them, I don't know why this is the first that came into my mind. One of the Star Wars Force Unleashed games. I think it's the second
Oh,
one.
yeah.
The first mission you play is Vader invading the Wookiees' home planet on Kashyyyk, and you're going around. And you've got like all of the Vader's abilities. You've got all of the big end game Force powers. And then you go back and you play the main character and you don't have any of it. But then it's like, that's a hint of like, hey, this is what we're going to get. You keep upgrading it
Yeah.
and you're going to be able to get these, which is fun. It's so cool being like, oh, like having, feeling that power fantasy and feeling really weak afterwards playing as the main character, but knowing you can get that is always such a fun thing. Like, I really want to get back to that.
And also, because you get an idea of, well, these are the ones I really like, so I can work towards
Yeah,
that, like I can
exactly.
level up that direction. And I think that's something you can do in a role-playing game by basically going, okay, so we're going to do a session zero where you plan all your characters. And then the first session, actually, you're going to be playing these like high-level versions of that. And then we're going to kill you at the end and give you your regular sheets. Hey, guess what, everyone? You've been reborn!
So you can always do that. First session, they're like level 20, whatever you want to do, and then they all die and they have to find their way through hell. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Now it's 4,000 years later. None of you survived. Oh, wonderful. I feel like that's time for us to wrap up, since we're reaching the end of our allotted time for the day. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Thank you, Danny, for coming on the show,
Thank you for having me.
as always. You can find more about the show on, I don't know where, Podbean probably. No, on Instagram. If you head over to at DNDNTVPOD, you can check out some of the posts that I make about it. I think the last one was just that earthbender is that lemur's earthbending. Because why not?
Top tier post.
Yeah, top tier post. It was just quotes from the show, essentially. And then sometimes there are other funny stuff. You can also find me just in general on Instagram, which is at TALUMIN83, Talumin83. Danny, where can people find you online? And anything else you want to plug?
People can find me on Instagram at danny.calamari.
Fantastic. Cool. And speaking of other things you can plug, we are brought to you by Masters of Alchemy, the premier game mastering service in Melbourne. Come to mastersofalchemy.au for all your game mastering needs, where you can hire us for private games, or come down to Fortress Emporium, where we run games every Sunday. Sunday, right? Yeah,
Sunday.
Sunday. For Dungeons and Flagons. What else? Well, I think there's a couple of other things. You can leave
I
a
think
rating and a
there's
review. Oh, yeah.
yes.
There's going to be the campaigns.
Yes, The weekly
That's what you're going to
campaigns.
say.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, campaigns at Fortress on Thursday nights, where you can have a short little adventure, possibly with Danny, because I'm not going to run those. I got stuff on.
Yes, I am going to be running some, so possibly with me. If you're lucky
Yeah.
or unlucky, that is your decision to make there.
Or both. Like my dice, both lucky and unlucky. If you want to send us an email, you can. The email address is dndntvpod@gmail.com. You can also send us messages on Spotify, apparently. You can leave messages on each of the episodes,
No,
which would be
what?
really good. You can, I know, I was stunned as well. Apparently, there's always a question on there, but no one ever sees it. I didn't even know about it.
Oh, shit.
You can. You can also come over to the Patreon, because there's a Patreon now. Patreon.com DNDNTVPOD. You can come over and follow along. It is completely free at this stage. There are some plans if you want to donate later on to sort that out. But we already have our first subscriber and follower, which is Liz. Hi, Liz.
Hey,
Hope you like the
Liz.
episode. So shout, and you can get shout outs like just like that, especially if you leave 5-star reviews on podcatchers and casters and wherever, so we can get it out to more listeners. So I think that was pretty much everything that I need to cover. I'm sure there's something else. There always is. But until next time, stay safe, be kind to yourselves, and may all your hits be crits.
Yep.
This podcast is recorded on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. Always was, always will be. We pay our respects to their elders past, present, and emerging.